Welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're trying to work out exactly what a modern penalty actually is, in association with AllFootballShirts.com. Well then, last week we said we hoped that we would be talking about a six-point haul today, but alas, we only got the one as we failed to win at Brentford on Wednesday and then went down to title-chasing Arsenal on Saturday, which leaves us with a mountain to climb if we are to achieve our European ambitions for next season. This weekend, we head to relegation-threatened Burnley, and our record against teams in the bottom three isn't great, but we did put five past Sheffield United twice, so perhaps after filing two blanks, the floodgates might open again. In other news, the club have announced that Jack Hinshelwood has put pen to paper on a new deal that will tie him to the club until 2028, or when Chelsea casually offered 200 million quid for him, maybe. One of those. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted. Welcome back. An actor who is synonymous with Brighton and is always guilty of treason. It's Mark Brailsford. And we're also delighted to welcome a raw virgin who is on loan from the She Goals podcast. It's Claire Hyten-Stevenson. Welcome, everybody. Lovely to see all your smiling faces. And it's nice to be recording this in daylight for a change. It's normally pitch black and freezing when we're doing this. It's just lovely.
Well, your shed Hello. Is. Your shed
Hello.
Is.
Yes.
Mark, welcome back. But Claire, welcome to the Raw for the first time. Now, in order to clarify AD's loan thing and maybe to put a bit more gloss on this half and half thing that we're concerned about, give us your backstory.
My backstory with football is that I am a huge She Goals fan. But I'm also a Liverpool men's team fan. So,
oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, this is, unfortunately, that's where my mum's family are from. And so it was a case of getting bored or not. And I got on board.
That's all right. We'll just carry on with the Alexis loving because, you know, it's
exactly.
It's a beautiful thing. And Mark, it's absolutely lovely to see you. Now, Mark, obviously, you're no stranger to Raw Towers. And, we've had you in many times, and you've told us stories about your travels around the world, watching England and going to World Cups and stuff. But never did we ever envisage at that particular moment in time that we might be traveling around Europe watching the Albion. It's been fantastic, isn't it?
I know, I couldn't believe it. I mean, in the old days, it used to be you'd go watch England away because you wanted to see some decent football because we were watching the Albion. And now it's the other way around. Now you watch England and go, God, this is dire compared to watching Brighton play. Watching Brighton is now much more attractive than watching England, frankly.
I can just see Claire going, in watching a men's team in Europe. Yeah, whatever.
Well, that might happen.
I'm good with that. I'm not. It's one of the things, actually, I think, as a football supporter, if there's a British team playing, I will cheer them on. I want all the British teams to be doing really well because it only makes it better for the rest of British football in general. So I'm happy to cheer Brighton on when they're doing their European tour.
So what happens if we'd have pulled our finger out, not got stuffed by Roma and met you lot in Dublin?
Well, then I would be supporting Liverpool. That is 100%. But there would have been a tiny, tiny little part of me that if we'd have lost, I would have gone fair play.
Yeah. We would have shared the Guinness, though, wouldn't we?
At least you'd have known where the party was.
Yeah. Now, Mark, we'll talk about it later. I know you couldn't. You're quite gutted because you missed a couple of the earlier.
Yeah, the I was filming
because
in
you were in India modeling what can only be described as a marvelous. Like a moustache. It was I thought you were your dad.
Yes, that's why I haven't kept it. But yeah, it was an amazing job. It's a Sony Pictures prestige drama for Indian television, and it's with one of their biggest film directors out there called Ram Mavani, and he's like the Indian Scorsese out there, and it's one of the best parts I've ever had. Played Lord Underhill in this period drama, And I was out there 7 weeks, I think. So I missed a couple. I missed a couple of away games in Europe, but I didn't see the rest. So at least I got enough under the belt, and I couldn't have turned down. You know, when a great filming job comes in like that, you've got to go. It's you know, it's a profession. So unfortunately, I missed out.
When
on a couple.
Can we see this? I suppose 21st century Patangyang Kippabang.
God, yeah, 40 years ago that was. Yeah, this will be on probably Netflix or Amazon Prime sometime next year. I'll let you all know when it's on.
Please, and, yes, please do.
Yeah, it's partially in Hindi because it is Indian Sony Pictures Television, but then I'm in English as well. But yeah, so I think it's we've still got some post-syncing audio dub to do, and then it gets a final cut, puts out on Indian TV in about 3 months' time.
Brilliant. Well, look forward to that.
Okay, well, we're going to come and talk about the She-Gulls very, very shortly, but we've got a couple of other games to get our teeth into first. Starting with last Wednesday, Mark, did anything actually happen in Brentford?
Oh, God, sort of suicide by football. basically, it was, oh, God, it was grim, wasn't it? The only good thing about it was we didn't lose.
Didn't lose, didn't concede. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this...
I think it's just a perennial problem that the Brighton have. And to be fair, there's a lot of times when the top six have this problem. When you're up against bus parkers, it's sometimes quite a tricky thing to break down. It's a skill in its own right. You can be the most talented, flariest team going, but if you've got a regimented, well-drilled back 11 that you're playing against, it can be hard work. And when you have the Albion, who are clearly at the moment not firing on all cylinders, it was always going to be hard work. But I think that the difference this time, and I say it's probably happened since certainly the return from that long hiatus in January, is that we're learning slowly. It doesn't happen every week, that when we play some of the quote lower sides or not the top six sides, we're not giving away those stupid breakaway goals like we did against Fulham down here or Burnley down here. And I'm thinking of the Forest game recently where we won it 1-0. That was turgid, but it was all about just making sure that we just keep clean sheets. I mean, if you keeping clean a clean sheet is half the story.
Yeah, and of course, respect the point.
And this is a guaranteed point if you can do that. But yeah, Mark, we're missing some of our players, aren't we?
Well, that's it. It's an injury crisis, and I think a lot of people have got a bit gloomy, and we're feeling a little bit end of term, isn't it? But everybody's thinking, oh well, this has been tough. But look at the injury run we've had; it's awful, and any team would struggle with that. And it's interesting, cross football, every team seems to be having the same issues, and I'm wondering if the players are being overplayed generally, and the extra time's having an effect. Something's happened. So, we're playing too many games, aren't we? And I don't know it's not a problem, I guess. I would imagine, I don't know, from a female football point of view, if they're playing more games now, but I wonder if there's an injury crisis in their games after some of the football that's been overplayed in men's leagues. I wonder if it's happening in women's football as well, because they're playing more football as well now, I think. So I'm wondering if there's a general step up in demands on players that's actually now becoming too risky, really. And I think that the injury crisis is not just Brighton; it's across football.
Like, it is. I mean, I know it's a very, very stupid thing to say.
Go on, man. You're good at them.
But and I'm very good at that. But I mean, you know, you look at, there's been so many soft tissue injuries across all of football this season, and I was going up to Fulham. I was on the train. I was looking out the window, and everywhere I could see, everywhere was absolutely flooded. It was. We've had so much rain. It has not stopped raining.
I thought you were going to say that everywhere you were on the train, everyone had an ACL injury.
That's exactly it. From looking out the window, it was like a carriage late. It was like, you know, and then I mean, the walk to like Craven Cottage is always absolutely delightful.
Oh yeah, it
was walk through the park and stuff. That was absolutely flooded. Now, if you think you've got obviously the foot, like the all the training facilities, they've all got excellent drainage, and all the pitches have got excellent drainage. But if you're playing on a wet pitch, it does take you, you're slipping all over the place regardless. And I'm just wondering whether that might have, it may have had an impact on the load.
Can I throw in another theory about that as well? And certainly it's something that we as Brighton fans have noticed, certainly since Graham Potter, is the nature of the way that they play is high intensity, it's high energy, it's high draining. Yeah. So not only have you got, like you say, slightly, I mean, let's face it, the Amex is always over water. So I'm not going to necessarily, if you excuse the phrase here, think that your argument holds a great deal of water. I can't help that, I'm sorry. But what I would say is that with certainly with De Zerbi's tactics, which other clubs are bringing into now, is that notion of the high press, is that notion of charging around a lot more and therefore not getting the rest. Instead of having a breather for 5-10 minutes, you know, they're having to go. Even with when you're watching the Albion play, you notice that they're still going like the clappers on 95 minutes.
Yeah, I would say.
No point. I mean, you talk about it a lot, Adrian, about game management. But yeah, yeah. De Zerbi's lot, they don't believe in that. Just, you know, and we were got undone at Spurs for it. So I'm probably more thinking that either A, that's something to do with it, or B, when our players were born, they were made out of paper mache. Oh, yeah.
Join us for Reverbathon 2024.
Help keep us independent and advert-free.
We are live at Brighton Open Market on Saturday the 27th of April.
And also at the Hope and Ruin in Queen's Road on Sunday the 28th.
Come and join us.
On air, on 97.2 FM, on DAB Plus or at RadioReverb.com.
You can make a donation.
You can make a donation.
Or sponsor a show.
To find out more, go to RadioReverb.com.
Join us for Reverbathon 2024.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Brighton.
We are Brighton.
We are Brighton.
We are Brighton.
Go on, Mark.
Claire's a Liverpool fan. I think, Claire, you would have noticed this maybe with Klopp when he first arrives at Liverpool.
Hmm.
And at one point, I think there was an accusation that he was overtraining the players. And I think the hard-running Gegenpressen, as they called it, was then blamed for that. And now a lot of the other teams have followed suit with the way Liverpool play, that high intensity. Did you notice that with Liverpool? Is that a similarity?
I think, I mean, the heavy metal football, as Jurgen calls it, it's so exciting, isn't it, as a fan to watch it. But it must take something out of the players. It has to. Like you said, they're at it from minute one to 97, 98, even 100 minutes now. And definitely this season, Liverpool have had a huge amount of injuries, which I don't think I've seen for quite a while, the amount of, you know, first team players that have been out. And so I kind of think, I think there is maybe it is a little bit too much football in general, and there isn't that sort of rest within the game anymore. There's no sort of sitting back and letting the other team attack or, you know, having a little chill out at half time even. You're just literally boom, you know, because every half is ending now with 5 or 6 minutes extra.
And you've also got this thing at the moment as well. I mean, you talk about like game management and taking a break through throughout the game. You also have the thing with the multi-ball system at the moment. It's like, whereas you sort of like have to go and search for the ball. The ball it's constant. The ball's always in play. You don't have
absolutely. And even, you know, even like the goalkeeper, they're now footballing goalkeepers. They're not just standing around waiting to save a ball. They're actually playing the ball out and sort of halfway up the pitch most of the time. So a lot more movement and running around for them as well. So, I think definitely. And in the women's game, I don't know what's gone on there because there has been such a high amount of ACL injuries. Quite a few kind of high profiles, especially beginning of the season, end of last season, where you just sort of looking and you're thinking, that's quite a lot of, you know, for the amount of players that, it's a smaller group of teams as well. You know, it's not a huge amount of teams in the WSL. But quite a few players have come out with sort of knee injuries and things like that. You just sort of think, is there something going on? Is it the lack of quality in the pitches that we're playing on? I don't know.
Yeah, in regards to the women's game, I've actually heard, and this is quite embarrassing if it's true, really. But I've got it on a good authority that this is a fact. That in regards to it, basically the equipment that you're using, the boots, etc., they're still designed for men, and obviously women's bodies are obviously different to men's, and there's different weight loads, etc. And basically, there is scientific proof that if the studs are moved around to suit a woman's body, and specifically designed for women, then you might see less twisty turny injuries like the ACLs, like the knee injuries.
Yeah, 100%. I think as much as the women's game is progressing, it's still quite far behind in a lot of the scientific technological stuff. And yeah, where like you say, the men's game, they've got their own bespoke trainers and shoes, and everything is made to fit them perfectly. I don't think that's quite the case in the women's game yet. Maybe some of the Lionesses have got that kind of deal with their sponsorships, but I would imagine on the whole, you're kind of just turning up with your kit bag and getting on with it.
They can't even get Nike to release a goalkeeper's kit. Then
exactly. You know,
It's easy enough for us to sectionalise this, but I think seeing as the subject matter's now been raised, I think that possibly what you're talking about there is a kind of a microcosm of women being lapped. And it brings me on to the idea that the Albion sort of first started promoting about 6 months ago. And of course, I'm sure, Claire, that you're actually very much involved in this, or very much sort of keeping your ear to the ground about this. Because not only is it just you want technology for women's footwear, you want basically an entire setup for women specifically. And one thing the Albion have raised is, that sounds a tough thing to say, a women's stadium. In other words, a stadium that's actually set up for women rather than, you know, men's stadiums that women can use. What's your take on the Albion's plan for this?
Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting, isn't it? I think, you know, if you're a supporter of any club, you want to have your own space. You want to have your own identity, and sort of, as much as we are under the Brighton umbrella, it does feel very much like we are two different clubs. And I think when we're at Crawley, don't get me wrong, I love being at Crawley. It suits me. It's easy to get to for me. It's, you know, it's where I first started watching them. But as a ground, it doesn't feel like ours. It's, you know, it's the wrong colours. It's not particularly, it's a second division team, you know, and it's paid for accordingly. So there's a lot going on there that I think actually, if we had just a little stadium of our own, I think it would just feel a much more like we're part of something.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, it's massively important for the women's team to actually be back in Brighton, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, welcome that. I mean, the Amex there, another stadium that's for the women to be part of it as well. You know, you're growing the family of the Albion support, basically, of everybody. You know, includes everyone.
I mean, I've got no desire to go to Crawley for anything.
There is that.
But okay, so, I mean, with that in mind, Claire, I mean, it must drive you around the twist. Notwithstanding the fact that, you know, it was effectively illegal in this country until 53 years ago that women were allowed to play competitive football. But does it not drive you around the twist that absolutely everything seems to be, it must be exhausting that everything seems to be a campaign to get the next thing done. And even then it's only a small step.
Yeah. I mean, you look at football, women's football, and I think it's in a massive transition. It's hugely progressed, but it's nowhere near where it should and can be. And like you say, historically, if you look back to the sort of early 20th century, it was women that were getting 100,000 people in to come and watch them play, you know. So there's the opportunity there, even financially, for clubs to say, this is worth doing, you know, this is worth getting our backers behind. But it's just, it feels very much like the little sister at the moment, and it's like, you know, getting the hand-me-downs rather than, hang on, we've got an England team that's winning things, and we've potentially got women's footballers going around the world now and starting to play in big squads, you know, Barcelona's and Bayern's, and you kind of think it's got to grow from this.
But it's interesting you're pointing out that when you're watching the women at Crawley and you feel that there's a disconnect between Brighton and Hove Albion men and Brighton and Hove Albion women on account of the fact that you're playing in, well, different towns, different counties. But do you also feel there's a disconnect between, for instance, the Lionesses, then maybe the top three or four in the WSL and everyone else?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's very clear when you look at the WSL, that top four, maybe five teams, they're gaining traction with fans around the country, not just within their own towns and, you know, kind of clubs. I know people down here who live down in Southampton who get a coach, a whole grand group of them, and travel up to watch Arsenal every week because they want to watch Russo, they want to watch Beth Mead. When we're at Crawley, all of a sudden we'll go from, you know, a 2,500 crowd to a 5,000 crowd because we've got Mary Earps there now playing for Man United. And, you know, and that's the local people coming out to watch Mary Earps. They're not coming to watch Manchester United. It's just Mary Earps. So I think if you've got a Lioness in your team and she's a big name Lioness, it's gaining traction. It's getting those people's bums on seats. And those clubs are benefiting from that.
But do you fear that the smaller clubs are actually going to get left by the wayside?
Yeah, definitely, because you can't really compete with it. It's unless you kind of just, I suppose, get a little bit lucky in that you get a good squad together who happen to gel really quickly and kind of go flying up that league a little bit. You're always going to be on the back foot as a sort of lower half of the squad, you know, the table. You look at Bristol City when they've come up and they've played really well in some of their games. They're not a horribly terrible team, yet we put seven past them, you know, and other teams are putting three or four past them because they just have that little bit extra that the lower teams are not got in terms of, I don't know, coaching and training facilities, etc.
But in terms of the coaching, I mean, obviously, I mean, the Albion are trying to promote the women's team as much as possible. They're trying to put as much finances into the infrastructure as they possibly can. They really backed them in the transfer window last summer. But I think we're on to about the 17th manager of the season, aren't we, at the moment?
It does feel like that. It does feel like that. I think. I first started watching them and Hope Powell was in charge. And I think it was clear quite quickly that something needed to change there. It just wasn't working. And then it kind of just went through a few kind of, I think we had Amy Merricks came in as sort of like a stand in for a couple of games. They didn't want to give her the role. Fair enough. Then we had, was it Jens came in? That didn't work. Then Mel Phillips came in and that seemed to sort of steady the ship for a little bit. And everyone was kind of like, oh, this feels better. We felt like you could see that there was a change in the play with the team. The squad, you know, was doing a bit better. But then it kind of stagnated and whatever happened and she was gone. And now we've got Mikey, who's a kids coach from the Brighton men's team. And he's doing okay. He's doing okay, bless him. You know, he's got from his own admittance, he knew nothing about women's football. So, yeah, I think in that terms, that's kind of a little bit of a, I suppose, a kick in the teeth for She Goals fans, because you're like, you've sacked our manager, but you didn't really have a replacement in mind at all, did you? And you just kind of dumped the kids manager on us. So that does kind of make you feel a little bit like we're not that excited. We're not, you know, the Brighton itself is not that excited by the women's team. So it'll be interesting to see when the season ends, whether Mikey gets the gig full time or they have someone else lined up. But again, within women's football, unlike the men's, there's not a huge amount of managers sitting around with no job waiting to be offered it. So, yeah, I don't know. Don't know what will happen there.
I mean,
you've seen managers for, I mean, like Neil Redfern, for instance, he's gone into the women's game. He's managing. Who's he? Is it Leeds?
I can't remember where he's at the moment.
But you know, he's gone into it, and you know, there are a lot of out of work managers who have got quite good CVs who could quite easily go and do it. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a female who's doing it, does it? So,
no, but the point
I mean, it would help.
But... Yeah, I mean, as Claire has pointed out, you know, Mikey's, you know, relatively experienced coach, but we're talking about, I don't want to say a different mindset, but for all those that criticize the women's game because it's not the same, well, it's not the same.
No.
And so you can't have, you know, sort of an old school balling manager who's going to sort of threaten to you know, whatever they're going to threaten. You can't actually treat the women's footballers the way that you treat the men's footballers.
Oh, I'm not suggesting that Neil Warnock turns up here.
No, but exactly.
Oh, God. Hello, Colin.
But no, in the great scheme of things then, Claire, I mean, all right, you know, the Albion are investing. And it's a good job they have, because without doing so, I think they'd have, you know, been worse. I mean, as much as they've invested, so has everyone else. So we've gone up and so has everyone else gone up, and and we're still playing catch up. Do you think that if there's one thing that you could change about the Albion women's setup, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't want to be sort of like pessimistic, but sometimes the fan base at Crawley is very quiet. And I don't know whether it's just a case of a lot of new people to football in itself who don't quite understand how chants and singing, etc. works, or whether it's just a lot of families and so therefore it's just quiet. I don't know, but it just feels very quiet. And I think if we were playing in Brighton and getting a lot more of that sort of local support that that probably goes to the men's games as well, you know, sort of turning up, then that atmosphere would be so much better.
Yeah. I mean, well, here's the thing. I mean, both myself and Al used to go and watch the girls when they were playing at Lancing.
Yeah.
And it was great. And, you know, like you said, you had, you know, the box office players coming. You know, Jill Scott was coming in playing for Man City, and Seth Hewton and everyone else. And, you know, and the crowds at Lancing they started off small, but they started growing, and it was growing naturally, and people were getting more and more into it. And the club were encouraging families to come along, like you know, for instance, I was taking my daughter along and like saying, look, you can do this too. And like it was absolutely brilliant. And then they changed the rules, and then you've got to play on grass. You've got to play, have a minimum of a 6,000 seat stadium. And the only place they could find was Crawley. And all of a sudden they lost half of that crowd. And it was growing. And like I said earlier, I mean, it was growing naturally. So getting them back into the Brighton environment, you know, you see it when they're playing at the Amex, that the crowds, the people want to go and watch them, but they don't want to go to Crawley. It's a pain in the ass to get to.
It's
not the nicest place. It also, it's Crawley.
Repeated yourself there. Yeah, Claire, go on.
It's creepy.
Crawley. I didn't like that. I've lived in Crawley. I love Crawley. I would call it home. To be fair, it's It's got some great things going for it, but its football ground is not best place if you don't have a car.
Right.
And if you do have a car, you've got to get there at least an hour early just to get a parking space. Then you're kind of hoping really that you can get into the K2 Leisure Centre and park there, because that's literally the only place you're going to find a parking space. And it's just a bit of a pain in the arse that you can't just jump on the train, because it's a good old walk from the train station, you know.
Three bridges, walk from Crawley,
either of them, yeah.
And trying to get a bus from there. And, you know, you just think people just can't be bothered. And then you're not getting the local people in, because it's Brighton. Why would they come and support Brighton? They're Crawley fans, you know. So you're losing out on both cases. I just think it would be better if we were in Brighton. We would probably get a lot more local people turning up, just thinking, oh, I've got nothing to do today, I'll go and support them.
Okay, we're just going to go on to Show of the Week in a minute. But for anyone that's listening and thinking we're having a good old whinge about the women's setup at the Albion, Claire, tell us something positive.
About the women? Oh, do you know what? It's fantastic, because it is... When you go, my favourite part is the kids. The kids in the crowd will sing their little hearts out and they try and get the crowd singing, they try and get it going, and it's just fantastic to watch it. But the squad wise, we have progressed so much since last season. I remember going to watch them and losing 8-0 to Spurs, and you came away from that thinking like, oh, what am I, should I bother next week, you know? And this year we only lost 3-1. So we came away from that going, well, it weren't eight. It wasn't eight, was it?
I suppose that's positive.
Yeah, exactly. But we've beaten Man City this season. We've drawn with Man United. We've had some really good results. And some of the games we've played where you just think, we shouldn't have lost that. We'd lost it on just a silly loss of focus over 1 second, you know, and just giving the ball away.
Game.
Yeah, the Liverpool game was a perfect example. We should have won that easily. But you can see the progress. The girls are doing really, really well. We're loving it. We're just there and we are cheering them on. And we just want a few more people to come along and do the same, really, just to get it going.
So with that in mind, you and a couple of friends have actually started up the one thing that any football fan would want to do, a podcast.
Yes.
Aidy, what a stupid idea podcasts are.
We should just stick to radio.
I know, just the 17 years. But Claire, tell us about your new podcast.
Well, I kind of stumbled across Ben and Duncan, who'd already set it up and started it off. And I kind of listened to the first one. And right at the end, they said, you know, oh, we would love if we could find some female voices to join us. And I thought, I can do that. So I dropped them an email and I said, you know, I'll give it a go if you want. And they were like, yeah, come along. So we started recording. Oh, I think we're on episode 6 now. So we're doing all right. We're enjoying it. We have a bit of a giggle. I think we do more talking after we've recorded than we did.
Oh, yes. Yes.
But
I did notice that the running times were getting longer and longer and longer. It started at 32 minutes and the last one was an hour and 32 minutes. So it was like...
It just gets to that point where we're like, cut it. Come on, enough.
I've noticed the best conversations always take place once the mics are switched off. Yeah. Looking at you, Ron Atkinson. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I did see that Duncan did put out a thing on social media about a call to arms for people to come and join.
So if people want to hear this podcast, Claire, where do they go to? How can they access it?
Oh, pretty much everywhere. I think Spotify, Apple, all the usual places. We are on Twitter. We're on Facebook, Instagram. You can come along.
The actual title is?
It's the She Goals Podcast.
The She Goals Podcast. So if you're at a loose end, or even if you're not a loose end and you're very busy, then make sure you do tune into the She Goals Podcast.
If only Sean Connery was around to do the intro, that would be just great. Absolutely. Right, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast, as ever, we brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and we have a shirt of the week for you. I think you might actually guess this one this week. Mark, have you got it there?
Yeah, I had a look at it. It got me stumped. Where's it from? Just as a clue?
Well, isn't that what you're supposed to guess?
Yeah, that's just what you're supposed to guess.
Well, all right. Hello, FC Cluj.
Right, well, I'm going to describe it. It's a white T-shirt. It's got a vertical red and blue alternating pinstripes, fairly far apart. Blue collar with a red infill. It's made by what looks like Mizuma, which, if I remember rightly, is a type of rocket. When I say rocket, the stuff that grows out of the ground, not the stuff that will blow up Beijing. there is a badge on the side there, on the left tit. It looks like a drunken swan with a fish in its mouth. I'd also say that it looks like the photoshopping that's mucked about says FGC. Now, the thing that actually really sprang to mind here was Swansea City, but they have a badge where I think the swan has actually got its wings out. So this could be either a swan or a gull or or absolutely anything. It's the main sponsor is Verco, V-E-R-C-O. I would say the shirt is, I'd say it's a modern day pastiche of an 80s shirt because of the pinstripes, where you think the France national shirt that was like that. As for the badge, it's going to bug me, so I'm not even going to guess.
Oh, there you go. Well,
unless it is a folded up seagull, in which case I might suggest Western Superman.
I'm surprised you haven't got this, actually, because I mean I got it straight away. Yeah, I think you should.
All right, well, put me out my misery and I'll decide whether I need to blow my head off.
This is what Phil from oldfootballshirts.com has to say about your shirt of the week this week. And it's the 96 and 97 away shirt of Wycombe Wanderers.
Of course it is. Yeah, no, you're right.
Right, Wycombe play in League One, where they currently sit 14th, and home is Adams Park, which holds 9,558, and it was opened in 1990. They go by the nickname of the Chairboys, which, believe it or not, references the town's history as a chair-making powerhouse. The club was formed in 1887 by a group of young furniture trade workers. I promise you, I didn't write this on April the 1st. For many years, the club thrived in the Isthmian Leagues, winning the title on seven occasions. But due to concerns about increased travel expenses, they didn't accept promotion to the Alliance Premier League, now National League. And finally, in 1985, they accepted the invitation to the Alliance Premier League, which then was called the Gola League. It was a disaster. They were relegated, and in 1997, they returned to the National League, having won an eighth Isthmian title. Martin O'Neill took over as manager in 1990, and in the 1992-93 season, Wycombe were promoted to the Football League for the very first time. Since then, they yo-yoed divisions, and in 2020, they were promoted to the Championship and were relegated the following season. Wycombe have an impressive trophy room. There are 13 league titles, many runners-up awards, and a dozen senior cup wins, including two FA trophies. Some notable players include Dave Bassett, who spent the season with Wycombe in 63-64, Michael Dubry, Rob Lee, Frank Sinclair, Neil Lennon, Guy Whittingham, Ray Wilkins, Scott McGree. No, I can't say that, Phil. Tommy Mooney and Cyril Regis all turned out for the Chairboys at some point in their careers. And of course, there's loads of Albion links as well. In no particular order, Graham Potter, Craig McHale-Smith, Alex Revell, Michael Mahoney-Johnson, Paul McCarthy, Ben Roberts, Baz Savage, David Stockdale, Steve Claridge, Johnny Dixon, Darren Curry, Dean Bowditch, Wayne Henderson, and Adam Hitchwood. And if rumour is to be believed, current Southampton manager and former Wycombe defender, Russell Martin, is being linked as a possible replacement for Roberto De Zerbi, should he choose to leave.
I'm not giving that story the merest fart of a daylight thing.
No, I wouldn't either.
But
no,
there is another Wycombe connection, by the way.
What's that? You're sitting on a chair?
I am sitting on a chair. But yeah, I also filmed a TV commercial with Phil Tufnell there for Norwich Union or something, an insurance advert, and they got a load of Wycombe fans in to save money. They rather than pay professional extras, they got their fans in, and they used to sit around. And one thing that you're going to lose time on is when extras look into the bloody camera. And these are all local. Oh, we're really excited. Oh, it's so tough. And they kept looking in the camera lens. Oh my god, it took 10 times longer to shoot than anything.
Yeah. It could be worse. It could be an advert where you absolutely corpse in it, eh, Mark?
Yes, well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but that was the edit they actually used.
Yeah, they deliberately threw me a curveball, loved it and kept it. Yeah,
quite like that. Right. From what Phil was saying there, one, I would say that I knew that Wycombe was the home of furniture making because I used to work on a furniture making magazine. The other thing I'd say about it is, and it ties in with the conversation we just had with Claire, is that Brighton and Hove Albion women got promoted to the WSL
at Wycombe,
with a match against West Bromwich Albion at Wycombe's ground. So I think that was the last time I was there.
Yeah, full circle.
Sorry, go on, Claire.
As you said, full circle.
Full circle, yep.
Yeah.
Well, Radio Reverb's doing that as well, because Alan, what's happening on I can't even remember what date it is.
Shall I tell you then? I'll tell.
Yeah, you can tell me. Is there a Reverbathon coming up?
There is a Reverbathon. A Reverbathon is actually our fundraising weekend for the radio station. We are a community radio station. We are not a commercial one, so we don't accept advertising. We only go for sponsorship grants and donations. I'll try saying that with my own teeth in next time. And so on the 27th and 28th of April, we will be hosting a weekend-long Please Give Us Your Money, But Without Swearing in a Bob Geldof type way, to raise funds to keep this brilliant community project going. We ourselves, myself and Mr. Adrian, will be live on air for the first time in about 4 years, live from the open market at 5 o'clock, as we watch Crystal Palace's results come in. So if you do feel like chucking us a few quid, or if you fancy, details of sponsorship, go to radioreverb.com/donate, chuck in your paycheck. That would be absolutely great. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, then do get in touch with us at thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. And we'll turn you upside down and drain your pockets of all the cash that you have floating around. So please do get involved to keep this wonderful community project going.
Yeah, I mean, it's we are looking for like headline sponsors for that particular show. It's going to be fun. Like Gal said, we haven't been live in the studio for a while. This is what happens when COVID gets in the way, and you realise it's a lot easier to just stay at home and on Zoom. But yeah, we are going back to the studio, and we're really really excited about it. And it's a really good time. It's 5 o'clock, and it's going to be good.
There's a bar in the open market which we're not going to touch. No. Talking of bars that we're not going to touch, Mark. Brentford, as we started saying, it was hard work. Did it make you just want to head to the bar?
Luckily, I was at home. I think there's that feeling, isn't there, is at the end of the season, sort of, it does feel like the end of the season, doesn't it, in a way? And it's not, because there's still a chance to get into Europe, and it's still a chance that we could push on. But I am getting that feeling that maybe the fan base, I'm feeling that anyway at the moment, that it's like, well, God, after exhausting European journeys, and have we reached this point now where the injuries are just too much, and maybe just we're looking to next season?
I mean, there is a school of thought, Mark, in particular amongst the fan base, and this isn't necessarily 100% true, particularly with everybody. But actually, I did a Liverpool podcast last week, and we were chatting about this as well, about the fact, like, when the fixtures come out in June, you're looking at the fixture list. When we got Palace, when are all the trips to London, when's the big away trips? But this time, when the fixtures came out in June, we're like, yeah, but when are the European fixtures out? And like, and that was
September the 1st.
In a supporter's mind, and I've probably been guilty a little bit of this as myself as well. It's like everyone was just thinking about Europe the whole time. And now we're out of Europe. It's kind of like everyone's like a little bit deflated about it. It's like a little bit after the Lord Mayor's show. And
there's a positive here, though, isn't there? And it's this. It's perhaps that, you know, maybe we won't get into Europe this season now. And I think that we could all do with probably a bit of a breather.
Yes.
Maybe. And at a time when the league is going to be in flux because of PSR. And all of these, you know, points deductions are going to be appealed. That was a big subject, that one. So then, and also Brighton maybe had to pick up some players and teams that maybe, you know, say, for example, Leicester, Dewsbury Hall goes for, we get bring him in. Maybe something new can be built from this next season. And maybe we just need a reset. It just gets I just feel that deep down in my bones a bit now, that we just need a little bit of let's pause for breath. We've had this roller coaster, and now maybe that's how it's feeling with the talk of managers moving on or whatever. But it's an interesting new thing going. I mean, little things that are happening that are really interesting. The signing of the Arsenal chap who's going to take over the medical department. Those things, going back full circle to when we talk about injuries. I'm wondering if now there is behind the scenes a little bit more of a, right, let's go again. But now we need a season just to reset it a little.
And actually, there's been the last couple of weeks, there's been, I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of negativity about Roberto as well. And the fact that, you know, there's talk about this new contract and stuff. And he's, you know, either he wants the club to match his ambitions. But now he seems to have like be coming out and he's been more positive. And he's talking about next season. We're going to do this next season. We're going to do that next season. It seems that is something to get excited about.
Yeah, or it's because he's off. But, but yeah, I mean, maybe someone's had a quiet word with him behind the scenes, and I do think it's a shame because he can't. Remember, it's a second language, and I'm wondering if a lot of this is sometimes lost in translation. Pinch of salt, you know.
Yeah,
no, absolutely.
I mean, the thing is, Roberto will say one thing, and just because of the nature of citizen journalism and there's stuff that's coming out today that with, you know, Brighton have been talking to this player, this person or that person, and some of the names that come up are completely random, arbitrary, and incidentally lacking in the ambition that the club has. And like I say, you get two and two, you know, maybe Roberto has had enough. Maybe he wants to hit the reset in the same way that we do. But he also knows, I wouldn't mind betting that if he's you know, really had a look around, they'll realise where the grass is greener. I mean, a lot of players will have this shortened career and think that the grass is greener somewhere else. And they realise that their careers are now marking time. For him to go to the step up to one of the, you know, Europe's mega clubs, it's just, for me, it's for the birds.
Well, I think he'll still be with us next year.
I think he will. Yeah, I think he has promised he'll fulfil his contract. Go on, Mark.
If players come in, and this is the trick, there are players, we've signed players that are joining us in the summer.
Yes.
And we've got loan players like Seema coming in back from Glasgow. I mean, there's some great potential there in these new signings. He must be looking at that, will be presented with the file and say, look, you've got these players coming in now, and you're going to get these players in now. And the injury crisis was difficult. And then you want, if you're not in Europe, okay, then you can rebuild. And I think you've lost two great players in McAllister that went to Clare's team. we do love McAllister. But and it's Casado, of course, going, who's never been ruined by Chelsea. And, how do you replace those so quickly? And then you get the injuries to the wingers, and then you change a pattern of play. It was bound to happen, I think.
I think in the likes of Liverpool and Man City would have struggled to replace McAllister and Caicedo if they happened to be, you know, their central midfielding pairing. You have to bear in mind that there were few midfield pairings in world football, certainly in English football, but in world football, they were as good as those two.
None.
And for a club of this size, now Man City or Liverpool or Arsenal, wherever it is, could probably replace them. We don't have that luxury. We just so happen to have this perfect storm of those two players playing for us. And there is no mistake that is our best ever season.
And Roberto's right. Do we have to learn from that? There's a club that actually what you can't do is go into Europe without that backup or filling in selling those players.
Yeah, and no club of our size would actually be able to cope in the same way. And even then, City might, Liverpool might, Madrid might.
Yeah, Liverpool could do it. Yeah.
But you've got these players have, you know, you can try and replace them. I think we'd already earmarked Belaba to come in. We weren't expecting to lose Caicedo, were we? We thought we could get another season out of him. But when you get this stupid 115 million quid, you can't say no to that. And it's like, but Belaba did come in, and actually now, and we're having a chat on socials this week, weren't we, about how excited we're going to be for Belaba next season, because he's starting to settle in and he's starting to show the player that we thought we had, and he's always shown it in glimpses, but he's getting more consistent, he's getting stronger, and he understands what is required of him.
You look at how long it took Caicedo to settle into the first team. I mean, he had to get past Bissouma first. McAllister took his while to get into the first team. These players, as they come in, they take their time to settle, and in both cases, we're talking at least half a season. Cucurella, all right. Again, Chelsea have ruined him, but he was our player of the season, but he took half a season to get going. When you've actually been elevated to a side that's now looking to certainly be top six, but is now trying to sustain itself as top 10 plus play in Europe, then rightly or wrongly, and I think that actually, I suspect that the level of expectation from the Brighton fans has not been as high as it has been from fans of other clubs who might say, oh, Brighton, you know, they've reached too far, they've burst their bubble. And we're actually thinking, well, actually, let's take a pause. As Mark said just now, let's take a pause. Let's have some consolidation. Let's have a breather. We've had an exciting thing. We know what it takes to get there. We know that we want more of it, but it's just at the moment, our resources don't allow it. And Roberto can scream and moan as much as you want. It's the universal cry of every manager anywhere. I want more resources in order that I can match my ambitions, that you can match my ambitions. You're not being ambitious enough. And everyone just has to sort of like just sit down, take a moment.
Exactly. And also, we didn't struggle for relegation like a lot of teams' first seasons in Europe.
Good point.
They were automatically relegation fights, and we haven't been. So, you know, there's a lot of positives.
And we also have to take into account the conversation that we were having last week, Al, with Kieran, where we're talking about like a few hundred million very good reasons about why we can be happy.
Well, there's that as well. And next season's accounts will look pretty rosy as well. But as he's pointed out, it's the 20th most expensive squad in terms of acquisition. In other words, it's the cheapest squad in the division. All right, that's a kind of a lucky happenstance, but it's actually, well, you get to realise that we don't have to spend 50, 60 million pounds. And I still can't see the club this summer, as much as it might look good for headlines and it might even satisfy the manager, I don't know. But to actually just cart out another a 50, 60 million pound player, I can't see it happening because for us, the risk is too high. For the likes of Liverpool, Claire, you know, all right, you didn't take much of a risk with 35 million. Plus, whatever it's going to take, you know, the final figure is going to be 60, 65 million for McAllister. But that's a risk that Liverpool can take. We can't take that. But actually, with that in mind, give us your lowdown on what you've made of Alexis.
Oh, he's just fantastic. I mean, to be fair, the minute I saw that he was coming and it was 35 million, I was just like, is that a printing mistake? Like, there's no. He's your best player. Like, there's just no way. And so, yeah, to snatch him out for that. I think the thing is with Brighton and Liverpool, they have very, very good recruitment, both of them. They're not the teams that are going to go out and necessarily spend the 100 millions on players. They might every now and then at Liverpool, but not very often. We tend to be picking up players around the 30, 40 million pound mark and turning them into 100 million pound players. Mm. And you guys are doing sort of a similar thing. You're picking them up for even less and turning them into 100 million pounds. I think it's kind of phenomenal. There's the word I can't say. that actually, Brighton have done this consistently for the last few seasons. This is not, you know, a one-off that you had McAllister and Caicedo. You've been doing this for quite a while, and I think that's kind of what has helped you guys to stay up in that sort of upper mid-table and to get up into the towards the European places, because you haven't been just like spending ridiculous sums of money you can't afford, you know, trying to buy your way out of trouble. You've got a steady ship at Brighton and sails quite comfortably in that sort of number 6 to 10 mark, with hopes of sneaking up there a little bit. And I think, like Mark was saying, if you've had that success in Europe of like that excitement of going there now, and I think you have that little pause, sometimes a step backwards is what's needed to move forward in life. And you're kind of where like Newcastle fell down, didn't they? They had that hit fourth last year, went into Europe, and it's just fallen apart.
Again, a crippling injury list though, isn't it? But it's
you know, but they seem supposedly got all this money and is able to, you know, do this, that and the other, and they haven't done it. And so I think Brighton have done really well in kind of just stabilising themselves as that team that sits in that sixth or seventh place and is ready to kind of move up a little bit as soon as it gets the opportunity.
Okay. Well, let's move on. We've got to talk about the title race and the fact that we didn't help your lot, Claire, on Saturday. I mean, Mark, I came out of there a little bit disgruntled, really, on Saturday. It was I just felt really flat. I thought, I felt like we could get something out of the game, maybe. I don't know what a modern penalty is.
Well, I was looking at the replay straight away from friends saying, oh, it was never a penalty. And of course, I was very pleased that my acting lessons to Ben White had worked, by the way. And, I am working, I also work as a director, and I thought he was marvellous, darling. He exceeded my expectations and how to deliver a dive. that was embarrassing. I was annoyed when I went back because I wasn't feeling very well because I've not been well. And then I was caught up with the Arsenal fans all blaming floating, and that was pretty unpleasant. So it was all round a pretty miserable experience, wasn't it? It just felt like, yeah, okay, next season then.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering that actually. I mean, it's a penalty aside. For, let's not look at the penalty for a second. And it is the universal cry of every team's fans that have lost that, oh, the referee ... Now, admittedly, we didn't have that up at Anfield. We lost fair and square. And the difference is McAllister, and we're all sort of, I said, well, okay, if we're going to lose to anyone, we're happy enough that it's him.
We love him. Yes.
Yeah, so, we do love him, actually. Yeah.
He's a lovely
fan. Claire, look after him and then send him back when he's, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like the time of his career we called Lallana time, but even in the first minute you got to realize that, you know, everything Arsenal claimed they got, it was, you think, oh no, we're in for a long afternoon now. It was putrid, it was pathetic. But the point is, I actually felt that the first half was fairly even, Stevens. Now, I know that Arsenal had a chance in the first minute, which, incidentally, I'm convinced was offside and the linesman never flagged for it, but I don't know. The fact is that when it came to half-time and Arsenal were one up, they could therefore dictate the terms as to how the second half was going to start, knowing full well that we were going to have to come at them. They then parked the bus, a la Brentford. The difference being is that when they broke out, they knew how to stick the ball in the net. Yeah. And this is the point, is that for me, the referee gave them that advantage at halftime. He presented it to them. He gave it to them on a plate. If it was nil-nil at halftime, we'd have had a different beast entirely. That's not to say that we would have won or even got a draw, because Arsenal are clearly very good. Yeah. But what Arsenal do not need against an upper mid-table side
is a helping hand.
Is help from the referee.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a little bit further than that. I think Arsenal were very, very, very good.
I still think Liverpool were better.
It was they were one of the best sides we've had down here this season, and basically they were creating a lot of there was a lot of chances which they had, which they should have actually buried. They did have the opportunity to they could have been home and hosed by half time anyway. If they were taking those chances. I mean, we didn't really have an awful lot apart from the one where Onciso nearly put it where the spiders live, which was an absolutely brilliant save from Raya, actually.
Yeah,
but I mean, the penalty, I mean, it is one. Let's for those who don't know what a modern penalty is, check badge first, yeah. No, it is basically if the ref hadn't have given the penalty, they wouldn't have overruled it. But because he gave it, they didn't. There wasn't enough reason for him to.
Well, that
not
makes
give
no
it.
Sense. I mean,
that is the official explanation.
Well, we would have probably been upset if we hadn't got it ourselves. It would have been the other way around. We would have been a bit annoyed that we didn't get a penalty from.
Well, maybe, but then when you see that the ball.
Yeah, but we don't get those penalties in the first place.
No, that's true. And VAR, I mean, I don't want to retread this because we've all gone over it so many times, but, you know, it can do one as far as I'm concerned. That's one thing about the women's game, whatever they do. Yeah. But Claire, if you talk about it on She Goals, I don't know. But, you know, that's one thing that'll be you don't want it.
there was a couple of things that we need to get into in regards. I mean, there was booing of Ben White and Leandro. Not from me, I might add.
Deservedly, mind you. I mean, one should never. You can boo them as pantomime villains. The only booing I don't like is your own team. And yet the only time I would ever, ever, ever boo my own team is if I saw a lack of integrity and work in the, you know, I don't know if we're beaten out of sight or even if we lose 6-0 and it wasn't a good performance. We've had the criticism that they look sort of jaded and rusty. Pascal Gross didn't have one of his best games, and if he doesn't play well, then the rest of the team doesn't click. But what I will never accuse certainly this current Albion side of is downing tools. I think that they do keep going all the time. Therefore,
the
booing
half.
Trossard and White is perfectly justified.
Well, I cheered his performance of Oscar-winning proportions. I thought that was
Can I also just say that actually Ben White is a bit like Leon Best in as much as they're poorly named.
Yes. Also, too much makeup, love. Too much dark. Too much dark.
Okay. It was a second blank in a row as well. Only two shots on target during the game. I mean, obviously, we like Pedro played most of the game against Brentford. He got on the pitch, so it was nice to see him back out on the pitch. Danny Welbeck. Oh, Danny. I love Danny. Everyone knows I love Danny. But there's just, I mean, against Brentford, how many chances did, just square it. But anyway, move on. Because we've got something else to talk about, because we are running a little bit out of time. But what we do need to talk, a little bit of treason, we're going to be sent to the Tower. And we're coming up to festival season, Mark. And what is going on? What is going on? I noted that there are three dates in May coming up that where you will be. I mean, obviously the world's in a bit of a crazy place at the moment. There's nothing to there's nothing satirical about the world at the moment, Mark. So how are you getting content?
Well, having done satire for three decades and studied politics acutely. I can't remember a time of it being so intense, maybe two or three occasions. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I once, when we started the Treason Show 24 years ago, it was like, oh, I thought it might last a few years if we're lucky. We'll run out of news. We'll run out of stuff. No, it's quite the opposite. I keep thinking, how do we satirise this lot when you've come out with a Tory come out the other day, they want a minister for flag shagging, basically.
For common sense, crying out loud.
I can't write this stuff. I can't make it up. And obviously the awful stuff that is going on in the world. But it is all grist to the mill of a satirist. And we've got a team of 20 writers that will sit together. We're going to have a writers' meeting tomorrow. We're going to sit down and come up with stuff. It's going to be a great show. We've got a really established, experienced cast coming back. Sophia Benn's back, for example, singing. Voice is amazing, and we can't move for what's going on in the world at the moment, and we do need to laugh at it, otherwise I think we'll all go mad. So that I've got a very lovely job that I try to find a perspective on it that makes it hopefully bearable, and it probably helps keep me sane looking at the news as well with that objectivity. But it is, I mean, I can't believe it. And also, there's so much going on. It's incredible that what's going on.
Well, you know, it's 24 years you've been doing it now, Mark. So it's like, you know, you started in 2000. Yeah. And you can probably track the Albion's progress with the Treason Show, really, couldn't
it's
you?
Funny you should say that, yeah. Because I was looking at some of the archive the other day. I've been digging up some stuff because it's our 25th anniversary shows next year. So I'm starting to think about what we might do. And of course, if you track, I mean, obviously doing Brighton Club Die was a big thing, because it was the Albion related thing. That journey was amazing because to 2001, that was about the battle to get the stadium. It was the political movement for to support the club and get the stadium built and the setbacks we had. And we were in League One and all the, you know, oh, it was awful. And to go from there to where we are now, talking about Europe and doing songs about it in the Treason Show. If you'd said that to me back then, I'd have also been amazed that not only were we still going, but the Albion were in the Premier League. And we're not worried about relegation. And we're above Palace. I'd never have thought that was going to happen.
But I still remember one of your favourite time out of, like, all of the time of you've been doing this in Brighton Till I Die and everything. I think your most favourite moment was, because I stood with you at the time, and I can't remember what pub we were. I think it was the Wagon and Horses.
Yeah, it was the Wagon.
Oh, yes.
And like Peter Ward came up to you. Oh, it's the man in the pants.
I thought, this is it. I could die happy. Peter Ward has said, it's the man in the pants.
for our listener who hasn't realised what's going on here, it was basically a Brighton Till I Die, which was done probably about a week before the opening of the Amex. It was at the Theatre Royal, pretty much a full house.
Second iteration as well, yeah.
Yes, yes, it was, yes, because the first one was about 2001 when we just got promoted from the 4th Division. So we're all piled into the Wagon and Horses just along the road from the Theatre Royal. And I think you came up to me, Mark, and said, oh, that's Wardy, you know him from can I? Yeah, sure, come on. And I've never seen you tongue-tied before, never seen you starstruck, Mark.
I was like a schoolgirl. I was like, oh,
You were.
I've worked with Oscar winners. I've worked with big directors. I've there worked was with a lot of well-known people. But when I went to Peter Ward, I was like,
there was a puddle at Mark's feet.
That was lovely. I was the real first thing he said was because I said to him, "Do you mind if we have a photo taken together?" And he said, "I was going to ask if I could have a photo taken with you," and I could have died happy. That really was a bit for me it really was, and he was lovely, and we chatted watching Man United and Best and Charlton and all, and that's why he played like he did, and you know, I grew up watching him, and
So Mark, we've got three dates: one in Brighton, one in Shoreham, one in Lewes. When are they?
The 8th of May at the Ironworks Studios in Brighton, and then on the 24th of May at Rope Tackle, and on the 30th of May at the Con Club in Lewes.
That's the Rope Tackle in Shoreham, in case you're wondering. So, you should all go and get along to see the Trees and Show. It's absolutely, I think, in 24 years you've been doing it, Mark. It's amazing. It's just an institution.
Sorry, just one last question. I mean, with those things, just a quick one. How do you buy tickets?
Oh, yes, thank you. If you go to www.treesandshow.co.uk, you can go buy tickets.
Fantastic. Well, break a leg with them. You're not allowed to say good luck to theatre lovies, are you? Sorry. Just...
Only to Ben White.
Yes.
He didn't mean it. He didn't mean it. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. So thank you so much for joining us, to Mark Brailsford. Oh, actually, Claire, before we do that, where can you find the She-Girls podcast again?
Spotify, Apple... you can follow us on Twitter. We're always chucking the links up on that. I should say X, isn't it now? We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. So, yeah, just find us and we will be constantly chucking out the links for people to join us.
Okay. Good luck with it.
Yeah. Thanks. So thank you to Claire Hyten-Stevenson. Thank you to Mark Brailsford. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Cause there's